Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs program bringing you local and national Native issues and Native contemporary music. You can find more information about the show online at kboo.fm or find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fograng, and it's a nice day to fight the empire. I'm going to throw a couple quotes at you today, and we'll kind of expound on that. They're very revealing. This is one quote. I get the feeling that no matter what the Americans touch, they end up with Libya or Iraq. Well, that was Russian President Putin talking to a youth forum. Well, Libya and Iraq, Libya is sort of broken up into pieces, rival governments, all sorts of militias, armed gangs running around. They're sending desperate refugees to Europe or death at sea. And all the weapons that Gaddafi had have been kind of taken over by these armed militias and sent off to they turned up elsewhere in Africa and in the Middle East. Iraq, there's lots of talk, but nobody really knows what to do. The Islamic State just took the city of Ramadi. Very interesting. They fought under cover of a sandstorm, which meant that the air war was grounded. And they had some kind of a big mechanical digger, I guess sounds like a giant armed bulldozer. And it just kind of came down and chewed up buildings and fences and whatever. And the Iraqi army went off into a kind of chaotic retreat. Well, this is a serious blow. Ramadi is a very important city in Iraq. And one of President Obama's aides said that Obama is going to, quote, tweak the strategy. Because Obama has been very hesitant. You know, he came into office under the idea of getting out of Iraq, and he doesn't want to get back in, although there are training forces and whatever there now. There are others who do want to do more, like retired General Michael Barbaro was saying, show me some success. Well, General Barbaro is one of the guys who trained these troops in the first place. And that sort of makes you wonder if years and years of training from America and these troops still run away from ISIS, what use is the training and what could come from more training? You know, you wonder, what kind of training does ISIS give their troops? They seem to be fighting very fiercely with, whatever training they get. Another general talks about, more boots on the ground, and he talks about not a long war, because nobody wants a long war, although it looks like that's what it's going to be. This General Newbold, that was on the radio this morning, was talking about one big, huge, quick response. Kind of made me think of kind of like shock and awe. So this would be this tremendous military response in conjunction with with the governments in the region, and then the U.S. would pull out, and presumably that would knock all the rebellion out of the heads of the ISIS people. Well, so this debate just seems to go on and on and on, where Obama wants to tweak things, and these generals and the warlords in Congress want to go in there in a big way, and it's not going to work. And it's an interesting writer. His name is M.K. Bhadra Kumar. He's a retired Indian diplomat. And he writes for Asia Times, among other places. And he says, and he's not the only one, a lot of people are saying this, that the only way to defeat the Islamic State is if the Shia and the Iran kind of, they can provide the boots on the ground. In fact, they are already. And this puts Obama and the U.S. in something of a bind. You know, we're supposedly on unfriendly terms with Iran. We don't like them, and they are sort of an enemy, although we're trying to reach a nuclear deal with them. But at the same time, we're fighting the same enemy, and they are being fairly successful at it. So this is what the dilemma is. The only boots that can help the U.S. belong to the Shia militias and perhaps the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. Well, what to do? Well, so keep talking. That's what to do. It's very interesting that this U.S. meddling in Iraq, you know, we think it began with George Bush's invasion back in 2003, or his father's war against Saddam Hussein over Kuwait about 10 or 12 years before that. You could say it really began back in around 1958, if not sooner. Back in 58, Iraq was ruled by a leader named Abdel Karim Qasem. He's a military guy who was very honest. He was a secular ruler. And he got a little cozy, at least according to the State Department. He got too cozy with the Soviet Union, so he had to go. So the CIA, back in 58, I believe the year was, hired a young thug named Saddam Hussein to assassinate Karim Qasem. Well, they set him up in an apartment in Baghdad, and his CIA handler was a dentist in Baghdad, and Saddam Hussein and his cohorts, they shot at Qasem, and it didn't work. Qasem was not hit, and Saddam Hussein escaped to Egypt, where he hung around for a few years. And then later on, his Ba'athist party did overthrow Qasem, and Saddam went back to Iraq. We all know what happened then. So the U.S. meddling began in 58, if not sooner. And you could say that Western meddling began even before that, when Iraq was created by the empire after World War I. And now there's all this talk about breaking up Iraq into its three pieces that were put together back in 1920 to form Iraq. And on to Syria. Well, there's no end in sight there either. U.S. meddling in Syria actually began in around 1949, when the U.S. overthrew a ruler of Syria, again on the same reason that he was a little too leftist. And after that, the ruler that they put in place in Syria, he didn't last very long, but it was one succession of coups and counter coups after that until Hafez Assad took over. And then he died in office, and then his son Bashar is in office now. And the U.S., he's on the enemy's list too, although the U.S. didn't mind sending prisoners to Syria to be tortured. So Bashar Assad, evil though he is, had his uses as far as the CIA went. Well, there again, the war hawks, they want more war. And it's very interesting that behind all this is a pipeline. There's a German newspaper, Deutsche Wirtschaftsnachrichten, which actually means German economic news. And they had an article that the U.S. wants to run a pipeline from the Gulf, Persian Gulf, through Saudi Arabia, through Syria and Turkey, and providing oil to Europe, which would bypass Russia. That was a big point of it, kind of relegate Russia to the sidelines. And it's very interesting that the Islamic State fighters in Syria, there's a lot of them. They control half of Syria right now. and 70% of them are foreigners. In other words, they are not Syrians. This news comes from a German writer named Jürgen Totenhofer, who actually spent 10 days visiting Islamic State territory at some risk to his life, but he managed to do it, and he came back and reported. He gave a very interesting interview on the RT network, that is formerly Russia Today. He was on a show by the hostess Sophie Shevardnadze, who is the granddaughter of the former president of the Georgian Republican. So these fighters, these Islamic State people, they are sort of imported by from other kind. A lot of them are from Libya, as a matter of fact. After we overthrew Gaddafi, those fighters went off to fight in Syria. Whether they're doing our bidding or their own bidding, well, who knows? Let's turn to Afghanistan. Recently, there was a news item, and that a lot of weapons and supplies that go into Afghanistan go through Russian territory. And so Russia's okay with this until recently. Apparently, Russia stopped the transit of goods through Iraq, through its territory into Afghanistan. And I saw that in the news just a couple of days ago, but I haven't heard anything since. But it's very interesting. Is Russia going to stop weapons from coming into Afghanistan? Are they going to stop weapons and supplies from leaving Afghanistan if and when that happens? Well, who knows? This is something to keep an eye on. And then we can turn to Saudi Arabia. And this story did get out in the news all over the place. They are advertising for executioners. No particular skills needed. No particular, you know, they give you kind of pretty basic training. You can be one of those guys with the swords who cuts off people's head in Chop Chop Square in downtown Riyadh. And it's very interesting that beheadings are up very much this year. I think already this year they have reached the same number of beheadings of all of last year. And here it is, only May. I think the number I heard was 85. I'm not too sure about that. Anyway, they are advertising for Chop Chop guys. And meanwhile, a security officer in Saudi Arabia was arrested for filming an execution on his iPhone. And, of course, Saudi Arabia is merrily destroying Yemen with air raids and everything else. But then we have to ask, what then? Then they can bomb Yemen all they want. What do they do then? Right now, the Al-Qaeda group in Yemen is kind of standing aside. Apparently, they are taking over territory because they are not the target of the Saudi anger. It's a local group called the Houthis. So you just wonder, what then? And so here it is, going back to Putin's quote that no matter what the Americans touch, they end up with Libya or Iraq. In other words, chaos. And that's what we have all throughout this whole region is chaos. And you have to ask, what does the empire want this chaos, or is it some kind of an unfortunate blowback sort of thing? Does the empire gain from this chaos? I don't know. I've seen articles where people say that yes, that is exactly what the empire wants. I don't quite buy it. I don't know. I'm willing to read those articles, and I'd be interested in debate it with somebody, but I'm not too sure what the empire does gain from all this chaos. Now, they did gain for a while in Russia. After the Soviet Union fell, it was a very chaotic period, and under Boris Yeltsin, and the U.S. and capitalism in general managed to buy up a whole lot of property and resources in Russia from these oligarchs, these newly rich oligarchs. And so they took advantage of that kind of chaos until Putin put an end to that. Another example of Russia being the target is there was an article by it's in a journal called the it's a website called the New Eastern Outlook, and it's by F. William Engdahl, who's written a lot about that area. He's an American, but he's been living in Germany for a long time. And here's an article about, it's entitled, What If Putin is Telling the Truth? And what it turns out is that Putin recently revealed that that the West could only be content. This is Engdahl writing. Putin stated bluntly that in his view, the West would only be content in having a Russia weak, suffering, and begging from the West. Then a short way in his remarks, the Russian president stated for the first time publicly something that Russian intelligence has known for almost two decades but kept silent until now, most probably in hopes of an era of better normalized Russia-U.S. relations. Putin stated that the terror in Chechnya and in the Russian Caucasus in the early 1990s was actively backed by the CIA and Western intelligence services to deliberately weaken Russia. And this is for this Engdahl writes, not long after the CIA and Saudi intelligence financed Mujahideen had devastated Afghanistan at the end of the 1980s, forcing the exit of the Soviet Army in 1989 and the dissolution of the Soviet Union some months later, the CIA began to look at possible places in the collapsing Soviet Union where their trained, quote, Afghan Arabs could be redeployed to further destabilize Russian influence over the post-Eurasian space. So there you have it. This is what Putin believes. And Engdahl's article gives a lot of evidence, names like General Richard Secord, for one. And so basically the Mujahideen, the bin Laden crowd that drew the Russians into Afghanistan once they were no longer needed there. They were sent off to places like Chechnya to keep up this covert war against not just the Soviet Union but against Russia itself. This is one of the we think the Cold War was all about freedom versus tyranny. The U.S. versus the Soviet Union. Well, the Soviet Union is no more. Russia is a not totally democratic country, but they do have elections. And, they are on their way to some kind of a democracy, certainly more than they had before. But the Cold War persists. We're still after Russia, even though the rationale is no longer there. And that brings me to another quote. This is, the quote is this. The U.S. government is killing our innocent civilians. I can't stand to see such evil go unpunished. Well, that was written by Dzhokhar Tsarnaev when he was hiding out in that boat in Boston. And he scrawled this kind of testament or message. And so it's quite clear what his motives were in the Boston Marathon bombing. He was greatly angered and upset by the killing of Muslims, probably by drone warfare, and this was his way of striking back. You say it's a demented way, totally wrong and unjustified, and I would agree with that, but it's that's the way people's minds operate. You think of how would anybody respond to drone attacks from halfway around the world? You know, put yourself in the place of somebody living anywhere in the Middle East or wherever the drones land, or try and imagine what, suppose a drone started attacking the United States coming from some unnamed enemy on the other side of the world. What would be your response? You would be angry, of course, but it'd be kind of an impotent anger if you can't strike back, if all you can do is run and hide and keep an ear open, you know, to hear that whining in the sky. And so in the Middle East, where these drones land, well, how do people respond? They go after local spies, because these drones do depend on local spotters who can, you know, relay locations and things like that. Or you can try going to the source. Well, it might be kind of hard for some Afghan Arab to get into this country and attack drone pilots, although a lot of people claim that a lot of terrorists are coming across the border from Mexico. But if you're a sympathizer, if you believe that if you have solidarity with the victims of our drone war, you know, the person might do exactly what Tsarnaev did. It's inexcusable, it's unjustified, but it happens. When people strike this country, right away we go to war. And so this is very interesting. You know, for a long time, the U.S. felt very safe behind behind the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. At least that's what I learned when I was going to school, that the United States is really in a privileged position in the world. We didn't have armies rampaging across our borders like in Europe or Russia. And I think this is one reason that the 9/11 attack was such a traumatic shock, was all of a sudden we could be attacked right here at home in a devastating, completely devastating way. And so we went to war, against Afghanistan, because they were accused of harboring bin Laden's terrorists, who we were preparing to move into Chechnya. And this German writer, Jürgen Totenhofer, who was sort of with the IS people for 10 days, he wrote that after 2001, there were only a few hundred terrorists. Now there are hundreds of thousands of them, and they are everywhere. So this war on terror is clearly not accomplishing very much. It's just sort of making the problem even worse. And another thing he said was that the terrorists that he talked with, the Islamic State terrorists, they want the U.S. to send more weapons for them to capture. This is where they get their weapons from, you and me, folks, from the taxpayers. And so this is what the war on terror is all about. And this is just well, it just seemed like, you know, maybe the U.S. can try to profit from chaos in the short run, but in the long run, it doesn't seem like it will. And I think it's very obvious. One reason why is that terrorism is not just it's not this group or that group. It's a tactic. And it's a tactic that works. It's the kind of thing that anyone can do. You know, you don't have to be a member or pledge allegiance to bin Laden or Islamic State or any one of the other groups. You can do it on your own. That's what they call lone wolves. And this is what the Tsarnaev brothers did, apparently, all by themselves. They cooked up, created a couple bombs out of pressure cookers and loaded them with gunpowder and shrapnel, and set them off there in a crowd of people. Well, that's what terrorism is. They call it asymmetric warfare. There's a kind of a cliche going around that a terrorist is a guy who's got a bomb but no airplane to drop it from. And so this is why our military strategy is not working. It's why our Air Force is not accomplishing very much except total destruction, which blows back on the United States, creates more terrorists than there ever were in the first place. And so you see this kind of a failed strategy, but at the same time in Washington, you hear people talking about more. They want to do, whether it goes from just tweaking this failed strategy like Obama wants to do, or whether it's putting more boots on the ground or more special forces or more airplanes, whatever, it's just not working, and there is really no way to make it work. So kind of leave it there for a while. I will say one other thing. Tomorrow, I'll be doing a special show. It's on the Friday Radio Zine at 11, from 11 till noon. And my guest will be a woman, a newscaster, a news anchor for Russia Today. Her name is Anissa Nawe. And we are scheduled to have her on the air for an hour tomorrow morning at 11, and we will be taking phone calls. It's very interesting about Russia Today. That's where it started out just about 10 years ago, and it's really kind of making waves all around the world. It's a news site with a point of view. They present kind of pretty much the Russian point of view, and they do it in a very, I don't want to say slick, but they do it in a professional way. It's not just, it's an interesting way of televising. They have very interesting guests. I've been watching it now. You can watch it on the, you go on the internet and just type in RT and you will get there. They have news shows. They have their regular news show with Anissa Nawe. They have a show where, twice a week, where Sophie Shevardnadze interviews people. They have a show called Crosstalk with a reporter named Peter Lavelle, who has different guests. And it's very interesting that some of the guests they have on that I've seen on Russia Today, RT, have been guests right here on KABU. The most recent is Pepe Escobar. I saw him on there just the other day on Crosstalk. And he's been writing now for about 10 years about the Russia and China kind of coming together in this Eurasian sort of superpower in a way, you know, with pipelines and communications and rail and roads and everything extending from China all the way through Russia into Europe as sort of this mammoth economic sphere of influence. And so other guests on RT have been Gareth Porter and a bunch of people, Ray McGovern, the former CIA operative. So it's an interesting thing to watch. So I would recommend, since we're going to have Anissa Nawe on tomorrow, check out RT, watch her show tonight, and be ready for giving her some calls tomorrow morning. Thank you very much for listening, and stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. We're about 15 minutes away from Flashpoint. Today, they continue the multi-part series, The Battle for Education in the 21st Century. And later, we'll hear an excerpt of Oliver Stone at the Left Forum discussing his multi-part documentary series, The Untold Story of the United States. And at 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman has an extended interview with best-selling science fiction author Neal Stephenson about his new book, 70s, the Future, Technology, Optimism, and More. But up next, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And today she talks with David Swanson, whose book, War is a Lie, came out last year. That is coming up next on KBOO. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support in our recent membership drive. If you missed it, you can still join by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Thank you, baby. I just want to take a little time out. Thank you, baby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Oh, wait. Thank you.
Thank you for contributing to KBOO's membership drive. It was a success, and we couldn't have done it without you.
Thank you for your post, for your like, for your click. Thank you for your love, for your care.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, May 21st, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web.